Hello, everybody. Welcome to another wonderful episode. I hope it's wonderful. It should be wonderful. Episode of the Digital Embellishment Show. Today, my guest is somebody who's very special, somebody who has really cultivated a lot of mystique and intrigue around the high quality and high levels of luxury that he brings to his projects. So it is my big pleasure to introduce Mr. David Drucker coming from us from New York City. David, how are you?
I'm doing great today. A lot going on, and I'm happy to be here with you.
Yeah, well, it's a pleasure to have you on. Look, David, I think a lot of people know who you are. You've done quite a great job of, I think, not just evangelizing what really good-looking print projects can look like, but you've also done a great job in pushing embellishments. Can you give our listeners just a little background on you and who you are and what you've done and how you got in the printing industry?
Yeah, so let's start there. I'm a former musician. In high school, I played in every band there was, rock bands and orchestra and all that. And I guess when I was maybe 15 or 16, my folks said, well, what are you going to do with your life? And I was like, well, I'm doing it, aren't I? And they're like, no, you need a profession. You know, so-and-so is a lawyer, and they play on weekends, play saxophone on weekends. So I was like, okay. And I really had no idea. My sister was going to school in Rochester for graphic design, and she said, why don't you become a printer? I said, okay. So, you know, I began to take some shop classes. I knew nothing about printing. I made sure that I worked over the summer for various printers, so I at least had an idea. And I drove up to the school. I talked to the dean, and I was accepted into the program. And a year into the program, I kind of decided I wanted to take a different path. And I went and did something else, which is also within the arts and art, which is cooking. And I did that. I had the opportunity to go back to school, but I didn't. I came back to New York. And I got back to New York on a Thursday. I answered an ad in the printing news on Thursday night. On Friday, I got a response from a print broker on West 22nd Street. And by the end of that interview, I was hired. And Monday, I started working for him. I worked for about 3 months with him, then went into somebody else, then went to somebody else. And at the age of 23, I started this company. Now, I really didn't have a business background, production background, sales background. I had none of that. But, you know, Drucker in German means printer. So,
yes.
I kind of like fell into it, and being lucky, established an office downtown Manhattan, Varick Street, Hudson Street, all full of printers, every type of printer, you engraving, stamping, offset, flexo, everything was in there. So I would get myself into the city, you know, by 6:30 in the morning, and I would visit the different owners and I would ask lots of questions. Now, I really didn't have work at that point for those type of jobs, but I began to understand the production value and what to do. And so when I would go up and I would knock on doors at that time, you know, and, you know, open up the door and I'd say, hey, you know, I am so-and-so. And unfortunate, but fortunately for me, I would do the work that the big guys didn't do, didn't want to do, or they couldn't do it.
And you got all the tough stuff.
And a lot of the work that came in was, you know, you had to bring in four or five different suppliers to accommodate these productions. And I just learned, you know, out of the force and the fear of not producing this the right way. And we made just a few mistakes here and there, but we never delivered the wrong product. We always delivered the right product. So you'd invest a little bit of money into yourself. You'd educate yourself in that way. And that was my education.
Wow.
And so fast forward, we began to do these commodity jobs, but we also got this other work, which was really fabrication. It had some things to do with printing, but mostly they were tough, tough productions. I had to really learn how to speak to my suppliers in developing it and get everybody on board and have these discussions of this isn't going to work or this is going to work. And, you know, I'd go to sleep that night, you know, at 10 o'clock, and I wake up at 4 in the morning with, oh my God, I think I know how to do it. Let's let's call. You know, I would have called at 4 o'clock in the morning, but nobody was there. So the discussions happened and people began to understand what my goals were. And the projects didn't become just productions. They became learning guides for future work for these suppliers as well.
Right. So you set like benchmarks almost internally of, okay, now we know we can do this and right. apply that to future projects. So tell me, David, you've worked in the printing industry for a while. You've been on the hot New York scene. You right now, your company, is it called Guru Printing or what is the name of your company?
It's called High Resolution. Quick story, back in 2008, you know, the market crashed. We were doing really well. And then in 2009, it crashed for us. You know, I had a staff at that point. But in the back of my mind, I had to figure out a way that should we lose business, how can I brand myself that people would begin to know it? So I changed my email address to david@guruofprinting.com.
I love it.
Yeah. And, you know, it became very easy for everybody. Everybody else had the high-res email with exception of me. And you don't realize what you're doing, but when, you know, designers and creatives come back to you and say, you know, this is some of the best branding I've ever seen. You know, people are really going to get you, understand you. And, you know, the other thing is, so my hair used to be brown and now it's gray, but that has become a branded.
I'm trying to get that too.
Yeah. And that's become a branded icon as well.
Right.
And, you know, there are people who I haven't seen in years and years, but they'll come running across a room or across the street and they'll say, hey, how you doing? Haven't seen you in a long time. You know, and if I'm lucky, I can remember their names.
That's awesome. Well, sometimes you have to pretend you remember, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you've done a great job branding yourself. I think today some of the projects that you broker, I think, are really top notch. And when we were talking about one of the projects that we'll talk about in a little bit, you've really done a great job of incorporating, I think, embellishments into your print. If you're dealing with embellishment, first of all, what is the trends that you've been seeing regarding embellishments, brand adoption? Like, what are you seeing out there?
So, you know, a lot of the productions that we had been doing were very small productions. So, you know, if you have something that needs to be hot stamped and you're doing a cover of a book or you're doing, you know, an invitation and you're only doing 100, 200 pieces and you go on conventional die cutting or conventional stamping, it gets quite expensive and timely as well. So, you know, several years ago, I was introduced to the Scodex and I was like, man, this is it. And nobody knew about it. And still, many people just don't know about it. You need to get out there and you need to begin to show it and you need to begin to plant seeds. Now, you know, I'm preaching, but the fact of the matter is that I did it myself. And people that I might have seen 4 or 5 years ago are like, oh, yeah, you know, we do have this short run and let's jump into it, call David. And, you know, as I began to do these embellishments, it's a very natural thing for me to, and I'm sure everybody else as well, that you do a production and you look at it and you say, you know, this is really nice, but if I could do it over again, this is a direction I might go in. And you constantly try to improve on that. So I had something that came in and the designer wanted a helix. It was a statement from Albert Einstein and she wanted the helix type feel to it. And I had to think about, well, you know, we have engraving, we have stamping, but you know, the embellishment of the digital foil also has a relief to it.
Right.
And we began to look at what that relief is and how we can create reflection and refraction. And that led into some experimentation. And I think really with embellishments, we are in the field of graphic arts and you have to put the art figure in there. If not, you're just a commodity. And to fit within that box, people make tons of money just fitting into that box. But that isn't me. And, you know, if I can get and break through to somebody and we can begin to experiment, and, you know, it costs a little bit of money and a little bit of experimentation, and the client doesn't use it then, somebody will use it later, and I'm already educated. So I'll show you something first, and I hope it works. But this is, you see that move?
Wow, that's gorgeous.
Yeah, so that is, those are rounded little circles, you know, and we really were working for how that light hits that. So You know, we went down that road with that, and that's the first one. And working with the same designer, she wanted to have the feeling of water based right. on another quote. And we did this, and actually won an award on this one. But this is using the gold, and you see how that moves.
That's gorgeous.
I mean, so, you know, and that's even working with the thicknesses of these rules, how they gather. And you have to experiment in yourself. That's the education. When, you know, you're sitting down with the client says, you know, here's a design. It's really, for me, up to the sales rep to evaluate that first and then begin to think of what is the art and at least go back and say, you know, this is something I want to experiment with, or this is a new technique that's out there and the equipment fits perfectly for what you want to do. And you have a conversation with the client and they design something, you have the desire as the printer to produce maybe a different idea. And that collaboration cements a relationship. And then when the next piece comes up, who are they going to call? They're going to call you. And that's the point of that. You know, we can all go out, we can sell, or we can be, you know, black and white in selling. But, you know, try to look at the different finishing that you could do. And it could be engraving, if it applies, you know, it could be stamping, it could be embossing. And in looking at it and evaluating, or even having the desire to do something to it, introduce it to your client, you know, and you will see it come back. You know, a lot of times we're order takers, you know, you're scared to say what you want to say. And, but when you do, it opens up dialogue, great dialogue.
So I think it's interesting. So I have two questions for you. First off, when you're showing your customers what's possible with the new technology, number one, are they, first off, from 1 to 10, where would you say their education level lies when it comes to brands and designers in terms of what's possible with the technology out there? And then, no, let's start there. How educated are they when you say, hey, listen, we could do this, there's this new technique? Do they know what you're talking about, or they're like, this is like voodoo to me, I have no idea?
There's two schools of thought here. One is, I would think the majority of designers out there know nothing about this. So it's really up to us to go out and educate as much as possible, whether it be on social media or in person. Personally, I feel in person tells a better story because you're touching it. The other end is that you have people that are well-educated in it and they're putting something together. But I'm finding out that maybe out of my top-tier clients, maybe 50, 60% of them are aware of the technology.
Wow. And then once you've done a project with them where you incorporate new technologies, like how often do they then on their next projects, if they come back, say, hey, listen, that was really cool what you did last time, can we do something like that? Or are they expecting something different or new? Like, what is that conversation like? Like the reorder rates when it comes to really sexy looking pieces?
Usually when you're dealing with a better designer, usually somebody, see, my clients are our design firms, agencies, 1 to 50 people. So, you know, it's not a huge company.
Right.
It doesn't have to go through a large committee. Most everybody does come back for a project, but they don't come back to say, I want to do this. They come back saying, here's a design.
Pitch me.
What do you think? What do you think? And it's, and now is not only their production, but it's also inspiration on both parts and becomes our production. So it's very hard to leave that element, you know. And the other end of the digital arena of producing is like HP has 8,000 machines out there.
Right.
And there are opportunities where somebody will come up to me and say, I have this production and it's got to be delivered in 4 days in Glasgow. Well, how hard? It's really not hard to find that equipment. And because right. the equipment is so consistent, I already know how it's going to turn out. So, you know, you can just take your, you know, small group of suppliers and you just expanded them worldwide.
So, David, you showed, actually, this is a top secret. Maybe I don't know if this is the premiere or not, but you showed me, and we talked yesterday a little bit about this really special project that you put together. And I think that's a big part of the impetus for you being on the show to kind of share this project with the world. You actually, why don't you go ahead and tell us about this project? I think what you did was fantastic. The images are phenomenal, but walk us through your project and kind of show us what you're working on.
Right. Well, the first thing is that I am really attracted to people's art and what they do. And when I see something I like, I make sure that I hold the image, hold the file, take a photo of it. I go to a lot of museums where they have artifacts from, you know, the 1400s, 1500s, and I take photos of that and I put them aside because I come back to them at some point saying, I hope I can do this. And so I had a good friend who went on safari, and on Facebook she posted a photo, a color photo of a family of zebras.
Zebras.
And when I saw that photo, I didn't see it in color. I immediately changed it to black and white. I sent it back to her and I said, so what do you think of this? So that is the family of zebras. And I'll bring that in so you can see it a little bit better, right? And here they are just staring at you. So this is about a year and a half ago, and I've had this in my iPhone ready to go. And back in, maybe it was June, a referral came in from a design firm who I'd been calling on, but I never did business with a design firm. But they referred me to their client, and it was a book. One of the owners took 8 of his clients on a safari. Quite the extravagant, right? And yeah, and so they had a printer that they worked with in Manhattan, and they produced a book, and they hated the book. And I think they paid for the book. So I came in, and this is the first I'm meeting this group of people. And as we're beginning to talk, and I was asking the right questions, they began to tell me a direction to go in. And I showed them that photo from my iPhone. And I said, I don't know what it is, but I want to do something with that. And, you know, you have a slip case. I might want to do a clamshell box, and let me put together a proposal. So as I began to build this, I work with a company named Metal Magic, and we did a multi-level embossing die, and that's how it turned out. And when I began to see this, of course, we went into the background, and I asked them to bring out some more of the zebras that were in the back. And, you know, when you have a conversation with suppliers, you treat them the way you want to be treated. Conversations go so much better than somebody maybe saying, this guy's asking for a lot of, you know, I find the compliments all the way down the line, bring back what I'm looking for, and great dialogue as well. So once we built that and we saw what was going on, I said, you know, I want to do something on the clamshell box out of copper. And I had never done it before. They had never done it before. We've seen copper etched, you know, or maybe poured copper. But I knew I was going to.
It was a brass die onto a copper sheet?
It was a brass die. We put in various, first of all, I don't know thicknesses of copper. So I ordered something offline and it was too thick and it didn't work. And then I had to go to thinner. Then I had to begin to educate myself on the thicknesses of copper. And I sent in a couple, and we wound up with this.
Goodness.
You know, so.
So how many tries did it take you to get your recipe right for that?
Not a lot. And the reason being is that the first time I brought in something that was too heavy, I knew it was too heavy. The second time I brought in something that was too thin, and it ripped the ears, and then I really had to begin to educate myself on thicknesses. And I sent this in, and they pulled it off, and they said, well, we're going to send it. Now, I think they were in Phoenix, and we're going to Federal Express it to you. I said, don't do that. Take a photo of it, or take a slight movie of it. I mean, most of my productions that are done out of town, that I'm not physically there,
right.
We work with FaceTime. We work with a lot of photos. I know depth through experience, so I know what I'm looking for. And since we already altered the die for the paper, you know, I wasn't going to go much further than that. The question was, once we put copper in there, there's a likelihood we're going to break the dye. And, you know, so that was one of the walls that was put up.
Did you break them?
No. I didn't think we were, but they had to precaution me as to what was going to happen. And my answer to that, and this is my answer to any experiment that I do, I've had engravers where they say, you can't do that. You really can't do that. And I said, well, I want you to try, and if it doesn't work, I'll pay you for it.
Right.
So this was a dye, and they said, you know, it might break. And I said, well, let's try it. If it breaks, we'll have to make a new dye.
Right.
In that, you know, I'm lucky enough to have had the budget to do that.
Sure.
Most don't, because it was expensive. But we're all now at this point intrigued to come out with the right end result.
So now you know you can do it. Now you got the recipe down. What was the reaction of your customers when they saw what you worked on, what you did?
Unbelievable. And I only showed them photos.
Right.
Just like that. The second part of this was, if I'm going to educate people in the embossing stage, you know, then I'm going to have to put together some sort of program. And what I began to do is send in other papers as well that we used to see how that worked. So now I have about 7 or 8 different papers that we've used that I can use in the future, maybe do a webinar on, talk about conversations back and forth with, and see how other people might apply it. Now, in having those conversations, people begin to tell you what they think. And that's school for thought. And, you know, hey, the light bulb went off and maybe we can use that in the future. But I'm going to try to show this the best I can. That's the cover of the box.
Unbelievable.
Right? So we used, you know, I try to use papers and fabrics that would mimic a safari. Yeah. Now, I'm going to tell you, I can't show you the interior photos because they're very personal. So we don't want to show that. But this opens up like a clam box, right? And here is the white one. Can you see that? Yeah. All right. So once we saw the copper was working, I began to look at, well, how else can we enrich this? And what I did is I found some copper ribbon that we used to help take the piece out of the box, right? Help to lift it. And I used also a ribbon for a marker for the book itself, all right? Then we gilded the edges in copper.
Gorgeous.
So you can see how this began to take shape, and it flowed naturally. That's what I got to use. I would present it to the client. They were like, you know, do what you do. The other end of this as well, and this is not using one of their photos. This is using a client's photo that does a lot of safaris himself, and I asked him, you have a family of elephants. And on the end leaves, I did the family of elephants. You know, just tinted back on this is called Lesabo, the stock. Cappuccino is the color. And then that we just worked on, you know, changing the color photo into black and white and then working back and forth with it.
Beautiful. So elegant. Yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah.
So, you know, and it's also working with the right suppliers. I worked off of Rico. It's not one of the main digital presses that I use, but it was great to make the slight changes and to see what was coming off of that. The other thing is to have suppliers who want to do that for you. You know, we're quite fortunate, especially now, that people are like, what do you want to do? How do you want to do it?
That's great.
Yeah,
well, so Dave, that's a phenomenal project, and I can't wait. Are you going to submit it for any awards, or is it?
This year, I mean, my thought process back in June was, how am I going to develop this for an award? So, you know, I know you know Sabine of Paper Specs.
Yeah, she's fantastic. We good partner
fantastic.
Of ours.
And she did just finished a video on it, which is going to be launched as her first video of 2025.
Oh,
and,
very nice.
You know, she just takes it to another level. And she said some things about the copper that just blew me away. And I'll leave it for that.
Good. Well, we look forward to seeing that video when she runs it.
I mean, her descriptions are great. I certainly would like to do one of her educational webinars on building that, as well as, you know, going back into the other papers that we used and why we go through that.
Wow.
You know, I'm going to say this. It's really important for sales reps from companies, even if they don't have the equipment, to go out to an engraver or go out to a silk screener and get themselves educated. You never know where you can just make a simple alteration by just stating what you want. Companies have their fixed equipment and never want to leave that because, well, that's how they're making money. And I said that before, but we have to look at the future. I'm not going to be around forever. And these type of productions that are bringing in 3-4 different suppliers in are going to go. There's not going to be quote unquote old world craftsmanship unless the industry is supported for that. So, you know,
yeah, and in a way, a lot of those pieces too, kind of that's your legacy. Those things are going to be around for a long time. And, you know, that becomes a piece of art, what you create. So I think from a legacy standpoint, you know, this is, would you say this is your Mona Lisa? Is this your pièce de résistance or, yeah?
So
have you ones up there on the rankings?
I can't attribute this to being the pinnacle because I've worked with many, many other designers where we've created and recreated and always trying to push the envelope a little bit. So I can't say that, but that is in the top 5.
So talking about legacy, I see you have a very interesting background. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that and how that kind of comes into your story?
So, you know, I have a family of entrepreneurs. My grandfather had a store in Brooklyn and everybody knows it. You know, anybody that grew up in Brooklyn are like, yeah, we know that. And my great grandfather came in from Europe in the early 1900s with a pushcart and he sold socks. Now at the time, you know, there were language barriers, but they were on the Lower East Side of Manhattan and he spoke Yiddish because you could have Eastern European countries that didn't understand each other, but they understood Yiddish to a degree. And he would sell his socks there till he made enough money to open up a stationery store, you know, and serving the egg creams or whatever they did at that point. And then he got into looking at furniture and then sending a drawing to France or to Germany or to Italy. And they were having custom furniture manufactured. And so his travels had been throughout the United States and throughout Europe as well. And you either had back then, you had a calling card and you had a company card. And the calling card, you know, looked like a business card. It just had your name and your phone number on it. That was it. But the calling card had the full information about the company itself. So behind me are my great-grandfather's. I found a box, and even the box was so interesting, of his calling cards. Now, these are printed, they're screened, they're engraved, they're letterpress.
That's your great-grandfather's Rolodex, basically.
Yeah.
Up on the wall.
Yeah, and, you know, I had found this box, and I was like, you know, where did this come from? My folks told me. They said, give us the box. Got the box, and for one of my birthdays, maybe my 40th birthday, they put this together and gave it to me. It sat in my office.
Any of those companies still around? Any of them that you reckon?
I truly doubt it. You know, number one, they're mostly European. So
yeah.
I truly, truly doubt it. There's nothing in there that immediately jumps out saying, hey, you know, they're still in existence. Because I would take a photo of them and send it to them.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. That's a museum piece.
Mm-hmm.
Well, David, listen, it's been a fantastic conversation with you. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on and talking about your wonderful projects and really all the cool stuff that you do for our industry. So if you have one piece of advice for printers who are thinking about doing embellishment or getting into embellishment or designers, what would that one piece of advice be?
Create your own opportunity. You know, we say that person's really lucky. That person isn't lucky. That person created luck for themselves. You know, if you have the opportunity to go visit somebody and you're showing them the work that you do, begin to show them other things as well. When you go to visit the engraver and you say, can I maintain that sample? Can I hold that sample? Show that sample. You know, someone's not going to buy that right off the bat, but they are going, a designer isn't just going to design, you know, one type of piece. They're not just going to do booklets. They're going to do invitations. They're going to do stationery packages. You want to be out there, and that's creating your look. And the more people that you go out and see, the more that you're creating that funnel into yourself. So, I mean, the other thing is to really be an active listener. Listen to what your clients are saying. They're going to say key things, maybe, you know, paper and maybe using a darker thing or having some contrast and, you know, sleep on it. Go home, sleep on it, come back to them, make another presentation, talk to your, you know, your people in the shop about it. Somebody's going to come up with an idea. It becomes such a collective entity and a positive force into going back into that prospect, that client, and creating new processes.
Well, David, thank you so much for those wise words. We look forward to seeing more and more of your things online. If you don't follow David on LinkedIn, I absolutely 100% just do it right now. I'll put his link in the comments below, in the description below. You want to follow David, see the cool stuff that he's doing. And if you want to email him, you can email him at
David@guruofprinting.com.
What an epic email address it is. So thank you again, David, for a wonderful time. And I hope to have you back on to talk about your next project.
I'd love to. Thank you.